if you're innovating, creating, or making a difference.
This show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
I just thought, this is a great place to push somebody out the window here, but why would the person be pushed out of the window? So you have to go back and develop some sort of a plot.
Dr. Gay Total Kinman often has murder on her mind in the best way imaginable. That's because Gay is an award-winning mystery author. She has degrees in both law and library science, teaches writing and her other subjects at university level, and has received 8 award nominations for her writing. Her work has included not only mystery novels for adults and children, but short stories and short plays. The honors her books have received include an Epi Award, which her preteen novel Super Sleuth won after its publication in 2004. In addition to entertaining readers with her books, Gay is making a difference through her work in the community. Her community activities have included serving as a board member for Sisters in Crime, which is a national nonprofit devoted to combating discrimination against women in the field of mystery writing. She is also currently vice president of Seroptimus International of Alhambra. One of their main projects is partnering with Reading is Fundamental. They provide books to third graders 3 times a year. Recently, Gay published an anthology of mystery stories entitled Death Inn and set in travel destinations all over the world. Before we start talking about your books, what do you consider some of the most important milestones in your journey as the writer you are today?
The first story that I had published was by Sisters in Crime in their anthology, the second anthology that they put out. So that was really exciting. And after that, then when the first book came out, that was Castle Reiner, and now it's called Wolf Castle. We changed the name because the publisher stopped publishing Castle Reiner, and so another publisher picked it up. And when I saw the book, I think those two things were the real highlight. And after that, it wasn't easy, but it was easier to get published having those two credits.
What's one of your absolute favorite stories about that time, about going from wanting to be a writer to becoming a published writer with Wolf Castle?
Well, I've always been writing, and I've always been involved with newsletters for companies or newspaper articles, so it's always been something to do with writing.
Fast forward to today, with 8 nominations, if I'm counting correctly, for awards, teaching writing classes, published books, 14 books, and a brand new one called Death Inn. How did Death Inn, your anthology, come up for you?
I had written several short stories set in different places, and all of these places I've been to, and they've inspired the story. So, and some of them had different titles. London Spy was a story. I wanted to make that the name of a book, Death in Covent Garden, but London Spy sounds so much like a thriller, and I didn't want to mislead people. So I changed it to the short story. However, when we did the book, then it became set in Knightsbridge, London, which it was. But I'd written all these stories, and I thought, gee, why don't I collect these into a book? But trying to come up with a title for a collection of short stories is interesting, because you do take one of the lead stories and name the book that, which means that you've got a story and a book with the same title. So we did Death Inn because we changed the titles to all of the short stories to Death Inn, whatever it was, or in a colon perhaps, like Knightsbridge or whatever. So that's how Death Inn, dot, 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 came into being.
Let's look at some of the stories in Death Inn, dot, dot, dot. I especially love Death Inn Semmeritz because I'm fascinated by the writer and what she's doing. How's that parallel what you do as a writer?
We did go to Semmeritz. And we were on a Rhodes Scholar trip, and the group took off and went someplace else. But I was in Semmeritz, where I've always wanted to visit. So I stayed there that day. And there's a lake you can walk around. It's 3 miles. So I walked around that lake, and I did stop at the bench, and there was a very heavy thicket of trees and bushes and everything behind me. And sitting there, I saw the rowboat and I saw the man on the tractor. And I thought, I'm always thinking of trying to kill somebody off and where and the setting. The setting always inspires that. Sort of P.D. James said this. So I tried to think of a story, and I really didn't have any idea for a story. Then I learned about the polo on ice, polo on snow, and I thought that was absolutely fascinating. So I did some research on that. Now, we were there in May, so it was not cold, and it's hard to believe that that big lake could have been frozen over. So it just, that's just how the beginnings of the story evolved. So when I got home, I did more research on the polo, and it's interesting, there are some video clips on your computer, so you can watch them, and you can see the tents, and the one shot was the horse slipping and falling on the ice. And how many polo ponies they have and how they bring them there, it's so fascinating. And of course, it costs a lot of money, and so only the most lucrative companies can afford to sponsor that. And why they started it, I don't know. They're skiing in St. Moritz. I don't know why they wanted people to come there during the wintertime. But anyhow, and the woman who is the villain was on our trip. I shouldn't tell you that. But she was a nice lady, but I just thought about all the things that she could have done without her even knowing about it.
You have a couple of women that we love to hate in Death Inn. You have that woman. You have Bertha. And Betty, I don't know if Betty is necessarily a villain, but you sure feel sorry for her. Are these all one prototype or several different ones?
One day I was walking across the street and just saw somebody briefly, and that person became one of the villains. I mean, I didn't know the person, I didn't know her name or anything, but she was just a classic person to me. She had a lot of personality, it seemed to me, and so she became the villain. So, no, it's purely imagination.
Gay's story, Death in St. Moritz, begins with a mystery writer who overhears two women whispering at the table behind her as she waits for her husband to join her for lunch.
Well, that was because I am a writer and came up with a story, and I described the breakfast room, which is the way it was, and there were two ladies talking, and the acoustics in the room were fantastic. But they were talking about something else. They weren't even talking about the polo or anything like that. So it's just all goes into the cauldron, and you stir it up and something happens.
And we won't ruin it by saying what, just that it's a great story. Tell me a little bit about Death in Hamburg too, please, which wound up being my total favorite of this book.
That story I started a long time ago, and I really loved the story, and I did go to Hamburg, and what I talk about did happen. The soldiers were there with the Uzis. I don't know if they were Uzis at the time, but submachine guns, and guarding it. And I was on a tour. They were not supposed to stop in Hamburg. So all of that was true. But of course, what happened after that was not true, or may have been true, but it didn't happen to me. It was just a very eerie day, and to see those men in uniform, and it was overcast and rainy, and it just had so much atmosphere to it. So just one thing led to another. And what I do is I write whatever wisp of thought is in my head. And then when I get that down on paper, then another wisp comes. And then I just keep adding to that, sort of like a patchwork quilt. But I love that story. And all of those people on it, they all had lives. And what happened in that room, that waiting room, I think brought out their memories of the past life that were related to what they did in Germany. So anyhow, I really like that story also. And that's a novella, and we published that separately as a novella, and then we included it in the short story collection because it is Death in Hamburg.
You make a couple references. Besides that, you really bring home the atrocities of not just what Hitler and his crew did to the Jews, but also how they stole their art, how they stole their possessions in a couple of other stories. How did that first come to speak to you?
That whole idea fascinated me, and it's way before the Monuments Men came out. That's based on one of the books I read. And I read several accounts and several stories and seen several pictures. And there was a picture of a warehouse that was like an airplane hangar full of crates. And they were all art objects. So what did Hitler think? He was collecting all of this stuff, and there was so much of it. And they went into the houses of Jews primarily, but not all of them were Jews. They went in and just took everything, like the silverware and the candlesticks. And it was just, I just found that so fascinating, repulsive, but fascinating that someone could come into your house and take everything, whatever they wanted. So I just incorporated that in the story because that's part of what I was thinking when I was writing the story.
You'd really make it real. Repulsive, I think, is a great word because it's like, imagine somebody coming into your house and helping themselves to anything in the world they wanted, no matter how much you valued it. Looking at some of your other stories here, I especially love, well, now we're going from Hitler and his atrocities to Las Vegas, because I love Death in Las Vegas and the White Tigers. How'd that come to you?
That story, that's another milestone, because that story was published in Murder in Vegas, I believe, which Michael Connelly edited. And my story was one of the ones selected. I think there are 14 stories in the book. So it's in hardback, and it's also in paperback, and it's also been recorded. I don't have a recording of it, of the CD. But our daughter lives in Las Vegas, and I love to visit the White Tigers. And I started a children's story about the White Tigers and just really wanted to do something, wanted to write about them, wanted to do something more. And the children's story didn't cover all the areas I wanted to. And I just had an idea when you went there and saw the White Tigers, there was just a net over the top of the cage. Well, it wasn't a cage, it was a pool and some places for them to lay. So someone could come down with a helicopter, and if someone was below, hook them up and take them off. I just thought that was an interesting thing because the White Tigers were so famous and so exotic and so valuable that what if somebody wanted to steal them? And that would be the best way to do it. Just hoist them right up rather than try to take them out the front door.
I kind of can't see that, but then again, what happens in Vegas? I love the interaction of the zookeeper with the tigers.
The woman who was the quote-unquote zookeeper, right? Yes, she was also a, well, I won't tell you what else she did in her life because that would give away the ending of the story. Yes, she just loved those tigers. And I actually watched one of the women who was one of the keepers, but it's, the character is not based on this woman because she didn't look anything like her at all. But just the way she took care of them and was also guarded about getting too close or anything. And they take them out when they clean that area. They have a way of doing that. But she just seemed to have some sort of a rapport with those animals.
We shouldn't say much more about that because it'll ruin it. But that's a favorite. People are going to want to check that out. Tell me also about Death in Boston. You have a different approach. You have a psychic protagonist.
All of the part about the painting and the theft and the Isabel Stewart Gardner's museum, that's all true. The picture was stolen along with a lot of others. And when I was there, I bought a pair of gloves with the sequins on the back of it. And they're very elegant and very 1920-ish. And I just wanted to work that. Looking at those gloves, they're velvet, green velvet. The picture is on the cover of the short story. And I wanted to work that in with the theft of, I just had an idea how the theft of the picture went. And we did buy the picture, a replica of the picture, framed and in glass. So we do have it exactly as I said. And we went to Charleston, which is across from where we were staying at the Y, in the which used to be the Navy base there. This was another Rhodes Scholar program. And all of those things came together, and there was a call from a Sisters in Crime group in that area, and they were doing an anthology, so it had to be something set there. And I thought, okay, well, I'm going to try and write the story and send it to them. Well, it didn't get in the anthology, but it got in my anthology.
You have a psychic here, and you have a ghost story, wonderful ghost story, later on in the book. How'd you come to choose the aspect of psychic or the occult?
I'm not a science fiction writer or a vampire writer or a ghost writer, but there are some phenomena that happens, and I just sort of used that in the story. I don't know. It went into the cauldron and came out as a ghost story.
Have you had an experience with a presence of any kind or ghosts?
No, but there are things that we can't explain that happen. I don't know that I've had anything happen to me, but of course, when you're a writer, you imagine all these things, and you look at things and try to make a story out of it, or a story comes to you. So I can't really give you any more substantial information than that.
So far, you've mentioned a woman crossing the street, green velvet sequin gloves, and writing down lists of things as part of your creative process. What else would you tell your students when they come to you and say, I'm trying to think of a story? How do you tell them to start, and what do you tell them to continue with?
Well, I try not to write stories for a particular market. Like, Women's World pays very well, but the story has to be very specific. So I did write a story aimed at that market and in the format that they wanted. It's called The Great Supermarket Heist. Well, it didn't get in, and so I revised it, and you have to put the clues in, and there's a certain format you have to follow. It's very strict. But it's hard, because if you write the story for that and follow the format, that's the only market that you have. And you really can't publish it separately, because it's such an odd format. I mean, not odd for the magazine, but just odd for other places. Anyhow, I expanded that story and made it a little more humorous. So that's going to be published within a day or two. It's about a 17-year-old boy who works in a supermarket, and his sister is 10 years older, and she's an FBI agent. And she feels responsible for him because their parents are dead. But he's a 17-year-old kid, so he involves her in a few things that she hadn't planned on being involved in. Anyhow, it's still a humorous story.
Where can people see this story when it comes out?
It will be on Kindle. All of my short stories are on Kindle, and they have a specific word count for Kindle Shorts. But when you go on Kindle, you just put in my name or put in the supermarket heist, Great Supermarket Heist, and the story will come up. So on Kindle, you can publish your short stories and then do as I did, eventually collect them into one. I don't know that I'll be doing another collection, because the short stories that are being published now are a variety. One's going to be a romance, and there'll be some mysteries, the humorous mysteries, but there's no central theme other than mystery, not like Death in different places in the world.
We wouldn't really be doing justice to Death Inn if we didn't look a little bit at Death in a Belgian Monastery. What can you tell me about the story behind the story on this one?
All of that is true, except for the part about we stayed in that very room, and I described the monasterium. There was not a woman like my heroine in there. And at the same time, there was a protest. When we were in one of the towns, Brussels, or one of the towns there, there was a protest about gay marriage. And as I mentioned, M-A-R-I-A-G-E. And I just thought, this is a great place to push somebody out the window here, but why would the person be pushed out of the window? So we have to go back and try to develop some sort of a plot. That always helps. So it just, those two thoughts combined, and we were stopped by the police when on the bus. We were stopped. That's exactly true what happened. They did not take anybody off, but that could have happened. It was very scary. And here we are, American tourists in this foreign country, and expect to be treated like that. Anyhow, I just combined all those things. And we took that trip maybe 4 years ago. So all of this has been melding around for a little while.
At the time we spoke, Gay was just about to publish another story.
It's basically a true story. And I just thought it was so fascinating that the fiance of this man would actually take a cat with her on a weekend when she knew he was allergic to cats. That fascinated me. Why were they engaged in was she trying to tell him something? So that whole thing was very interesting. So that's how that came about. And the fact that he owned the flower shop is added, and the fact that the woman who buys the flowers, that's also something I added in. So I mostly write mysteries. I do have a few science fiction stories that are in the works, and they haven't been completed yet. I'm working on a few other things. I'm doing all of my short plays, my 10-minute plays that have been produced at the Lizard Theater. So those are all going up, and we'll probably collect the 10-minute plays in a collection.
The romance Gay mentioned is entitled Flowers. It has now been published and is available both on her website, GayKinman.com, and on Amazon.com. Gay also talked about the creative process involved in one of her novels, which she published in 2012.
I wanted to mention about Death in Rancho Las Amigas. That book was almost written without any revising. I almost was able to write the entire thing without any problem whatsoever. That book just came to me. Of course, it was revised afterwards, but that seemed like such an easy book to write. It's about a widow whose husband just died. He's older than she is, and she's trying to cope with it. So she goes to Taos. The location is actually Rancho de Taos, where the church is that Georgia O'Keeffe painted, and other people have painted too. And they have a picture of that in their house, which we have also. So that picture fascinated me, and that was, as I say, an easy book to write.
Gay also talked about her children's books and the inspiration behind them.
Super Sleuth is five mysteries using Allison Lee Powers, and it's based on our granddaughter, Allison, who was 9 when I wrote the first story, and then she was 11 when I wrote the other 4 stories. And I'm fascinated with the Octagon House, and I was able to go into the one that was here in L.A. in Heritage Park when they first moved it. It's a very interesting house. There is no hiding place in there, but I used the hiding place. And the miniature book story, I worked on the miniature books at the Huntington Library, so all of the titles in that story are actual books in the Huntington Library. And I love horses, so I wrote The Mystery of the Missing Arabian using 2 girls, Allison and her friend Melissa, and they are involved in horses and work in a stable. And The Secret of the Equestrian Park follows up on that. These are all sequential stories. And then her mother is a librarian and conservator, and she's working, as she did on the miniature books, she's working in a mansion cataloging the books for a very rich man. And so that's The Secret of the Strange Staircase, because the man's wife disappeared mysteriously. But we don't have any butchered bodies around. We don't usually do that with children. The other one is not a mystery. It's Gilly's Divorce, and it's about a 12-year-old girl whose parents are getting divorced. So her name is Gilly, and in essence, it's Gilly's divorce, because she feels, like most children, that she was responsible for the parents getting divorced, and if only she had done something or not done something, then it would be all right. So 2/3 of the book is about her coping with the divorce and parents separated, and her mother gets a boyfriend and her father gets a girlfriend, and how she handles that. And because she's missed so much school, and she does try to commit suicide, I've tried to keep it light. And she's missed so much school, so she has to write a paper. So she writes a paper on "Don't Make the Mistakes I Did." So that's actually nonfiction, and it's published separately on Kindle as Gilly's Manual and Advice on Coping with Your Divorce. I hope that that book will help some people, some kids. They read it and don't have to go through all the things that Gilly did. This is based on a real story. And the other one I have is Lauren McPherson, and that is also a children's book, and it's based on one of our granddaughters, Lauren, whom we took on intergenerational Rhodes Scholar trips several times, and she didn't talk very much. In fact, she hardly talked at all. So when I wrote the story, I made her have elective mutism, which I found out is not uncommon. kids decide they're not going to talk, and they don't. So there's nothing medically wrong with them. It's something psychological, and some of them grow out of it, and some of them don't. So I gave her the reason why she wasn't talking, and I wrote 4 stories about her. They're sequential. They start in April, and they end in September, and she's from Scotland, so the first story has to do with where her father works. He's the head of security for a whiskey distillery, and of course you shouldn't have whiskey in the children's book, but that's her background. And she finds some thieves, and she warns the people about the thieves. Then she comes to America to be with her mother's sister and her cousin, who's the same age as she is, and they have a couple of adventures, and that one of them is a ghost story. And that story is based on a true incident of what the man did, but I've never heard of the wife, the dead wife, coming back. So anyhow, those stories were not adult-type stories. They were children's stories, and I could see Lauren and Allison in these stories, so I wrote them.
What did Allison think of her other self that you wrote, and Lauren of her other self?
I don't know. We've never talked about it, and I've never talked about it with Lauren, so I don't know how they feel about it. I hope they're not disappointed.
They're probably thrilled to death. What's an average workday like for you when you're writing?
I do 8 hours every day. I keep a log of what I do, what I'm working on, how long it takes me. In general, I don't do the minutes down to the minutes like I did when I was working in a law firm. And I have a schedule of what I do and when I work, and I try to keep to that schedule. There's a lot of, you don't write 8 hours a day. You've got business to do, you've got to PR your books, you've got to do interviews, which I love to do. And there's a variety of business. So I would say 1/3 of it is writing, and then 1/3 of it is revising, and then 1/3 of it is business and research. So you have just the 1/3 of the time when you're actually creating something. And I would say I have an idea for a story now that's going to be the 6th one in a series. The first one's already published. Second one will be going up soon. And I only have just a basic premise. So when I turn the light out at night, I think about the next scene or what could happen next. And then just keep building on that, as I mentioned, like a patchwork quilt. Just keep adding to it.
Do you find yourself dreaming about what could happen next?
Well, if I dream about it, I won't remember it at all. But if I sort of force my mind to think about it, if I don't try to think about it, and an idea comes and everything, I drift off, I will not remember a thing about it. But if I call it forcing the idea, because I'm solely thinking about that one thing, and then I do remember that in the morning. And so I usually make my pot of tea, go back to bed, and write it. Sit up and drink my tea and write the story.
I'm getting an impression that writer's block has never come into the mix for you, but is that true?
I don't think there's any such thing as a writer's block. You can go down a path, and Sarah Paretsky has mentioned this. She's thrown out 100 pages, and I've thrown out things too. You just get to the dead end, and you can't think of another thing to do, of what your character can do, and you're no longer interested. It's boring. It's not, you don't want to be there. So I switch to another project and another short story, or you revise something else, or I work on something else. I usually have 4 or 5 things going at the same time. I've got 2 books that I will be revising, and I just want to let them sit for a while and work on my other things. I'm trying to get everything that I finished up on Amazon and Kindle. So it involves the process of having it edited, having it proofread, and then getting the cover and the formatting and so forth done. So there's a little time process in there. But what's nice now is it's instant gratification, because it can get up almost immediately.
When you've gotten to where you find a story boring and you put it down and go work on something else, how long does it take to get back to where you'll find it interesting?
Well, if I don't find it interesting, it's dead. It's gone. That thought isn't there anymore. But if I get to a point in a story where I don't know what's going to happen next, there's a couple of things. There's probably four or five tricks that I use. And one is, Raymond Chandler said, bring in a man with a gun. Well, you have to explain what the man is doing with a gun. So you bring in another person, perhaps, or you, if you're two people talking and you're writing in the POV of one person, then you switch to the POV in another person and see what that person is thinking. And sometimes that will not even be in the book at all. It's just to see what's going to happen next. So that POV of A is what the story is, and I am writing this, I am doing this, I'm talking to Mary Lou. So I go into Mary Lou's head and see what she's thinking. And maybe she's thinking, well, I'm going to fool her and I'm going to tell her this stuff, and that, I know that's really going to send her off. So that's great, because then she does it, and then that's another path for you to take. Also, there's lots of lists that you can do. What did the person eat for breakfast? What did the person drive? Because all of those things tell what the character is. So I do some of that, but I don't usually fill out full biographies of all the characters. It takes a lot of time, and sometimes it's not worth it. So I do a few things like that, and if I can't think of anything else, then I work on something else. And then that story that I've left keeps coming back in my mind, so I'll go back to it.
And those are some great tips for writers, too. As we conclude, what would you really love people to get from you and the books you write about innovation, creativity, and making a difference?
Well, I'd like them to enjoy the books and buy the books and buy the short stories and be entertained by what I write, because I'm writing because I love to write, and I hope that people will enjoy what I write.
Thank you for your time today, Gay. You and I have been listening to award-winning author Dr. Gay Total Kinman. You can find her books on her website, gaykinman.com. Be sure to look for her new mystery anthology, Death Inn, and her romance, which is called Flowers and is now available. Once again, her website is gaykinman.com. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomaverix.com. That's twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomaverix@gmail.com. The music you're hearing is royalty-free production music provided by Pond5 at pond5.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.